A reading from the Gospel of Luke, the 24th chapter, beginning with the 13th verse. Now on that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with one another about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And Jesus said to them, "What were you discussing with one another while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there in these days?" He asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet, mighty in deed and word before God and before all the people, and how the chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who would redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some of the women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they didn't find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see him. Then he said to them, 'Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?' Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. And as they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, 'Stay with us, because it is almost evening, and the day is now nearly over.' So he did go in to stay with them. And when he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed, and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to one another, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road and while he was opening the scriptures to us?' At that same hour, they got up and returned to Jerusalem. They found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, 'The Lord has risen indeed, and he has appeared to Simon.' Then they told them what had happened on the road, and how the risen Lord had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread." This is the word of the Lord. We have had a little crisis in our family this past week. It all started when my husband and I returned from a trip to Richmond, where we had gone to see our grandchildren. And, of course, their parents. When we got in Sunday night, there was hanging on the front doorknob a notice informing us of an attempt to deliver a package to Alfred Adams. It said that the signature of the recipient of the package, was required in order for the package to be left at the residence. Since that notice had Al's name on it and not mine, I decided not to get involved. A couple of days later, I asked whom the package was from, assuming that Al had gotten things all straightened out. He said, "Well, I called Federal Express to ask that very question. I was told the package had been mailed from Kinko's." I didn't know anything about Kinko's or anybody who was sending me a package from Kinko's. "Well, what'd you tell the lady?" I told her I couldn't sit around all day at home waiting to receive a package. The lady said, "What do you want me to do with the package, Mr. Adams?" "Why don't you just send it back where it came from?" Al said. Thus endeth the conversation with Federal Express. Okay, 2 days pass. Our daughter calls from California to thank Al for a book, a package he has just sent her. "By the way, Dad," she says, "the bike ought to be arriving in Atlanta any day now." "What bike?" Al asks. "The one I told you a couple of weeks ago I was going to be shipping. She's coming to see us, and she wanted the bike to be here when she was here." The bike that Elizabeth had taken apart, carefully packed. The bike that she had then taken to Kinko's in Los Angeles, California. By this time, the bike was on its way back across the continental United States to Los Angeles, California. Well, as you can imagine, a difference of opinion has arisen as to how much time passed between when the heads up was given about the bike's arrival and the day that little infamous notice got hung on the doorknob. There is also a difference of opinion as to why, in any case, one would send a Federal Express package back to where it had come from. Suppose it contained a check for $1 million. An original Rembrandt. I mean, my mind went wild with these things. If my sweet mother hadn't been deceased, I would have said it might have been my mother sending us my baby shoes, bronzed for us to keep forever. Al said, "I get a lot of things by Federal Express I don't want to get. At the office, sometimes I get them at home." And I said, "I suspect some of us are just more curious than the rest of us. I know that all of us are capable of getting ourselves in awkward situations because of a lack of knowledge, a lack of awareness. If Al had had any awareness that Elizabeth had sent the package, he would have moved heaven and earth to receive it." Here's another case in point about the kind of holes we can dig because of lack of recognition, awareness, or information. In the early 1990s, I was to receive an honorary degree from a fine southern college. I had been instructed to report to a certain room in the administration building just prior to the graduation ceremony. I walked into that room and discovered that I was the second person to arrive. The first person to arrive, the only one in the room, was the other honorary degree recipient, someone I knew by reputation, a very prominent businessman. He looked at me, and I looked at him, and as I was about to extend my hand, he said, "Would you mind getting me a cup of coffee?" I have never been more intent on a mission in my life than to find that fellow a cup of coffee, because I knew that when I handed it to him, or soon thereafter, he would realize that I was the other honoree. It was a sweet moment, I have to say. This lack of recognition, lack of knowledge can get people into some very awkward situations. Today's day one preacher, Donovan Drake, suggests that in fact it is this lack of recognition that empowers today's story from the Gospel of Luke. The risen Lord has joined Cleopas and his friend on the road to Emmaus, and they absolutely do not recognize him. They have no idea who he is. As he walks along beside them, he asks them, whom were you talking about as you were walking along? And they say to him, are you the only person in Jerusalem who doesn't know about the things that have taken place there in recent days? What days? What things? The stranger asks. And they tell him about it. Earlier, Jesus, well before his death, had told his followers what would happen. Just as the prophets predicted, he, the Son of Man, would have to go to Jerusalem, would be handed over. He would be mocked and insulted, flogged and killed, and on the third day would rise from the dead. He had told them, but they had forgotten. These two, Cleopas and the other, who had placed their hopes in Jesus, who had in fact been likely eyewitnesses to his death, could not see the risen Lord standing right beside them, could not see him as the fulfillment of the promise that new life could be born out of death. Their hearts and minds were so full of discouragement that their eyes could not see. Have you ever been just in a terrible mood and your partner or your friend says, oh, look at this, isn't this great? And you say, yeah, yeah, that's great. Whatever it is, it doesn't look great to you. I do not know why Jesus did not tell them on the road to Emmaus who he was, even as he spent the entire afternoon teaching them and explaining what the scriptures had to say about the Messiah. He never told them, and they never saw him as the Son of God and the conqueror of death. I remember a story about Albert Einstein and how one day he was riding that little train called the Dinky between Princeton University and New York City. A young college student sat down beside him on that crowded train. What do you do? The student asked the Nobel Prize-winning physicist. Professor Einstein said, I study physics. Physics, she said. I finished that last semester. Sometimes our eyes are blind to the worth of others. Sometimes it is an inflated ego that makes us that way, but sometimes it is deflated hope that keeps us from seeing. Here, this road was literally alive with the presence of God, and the two didn't know it. It's hard to blame them, though. The skies were dark with hopelessness in and around Jerusalem. Those who had loved Jesus had been through the lowest of the low. And these two were getting out of town. It's not because there was something wonderful waiting for them in Emmaus. They were going to Emmaus for one reason. It wasn't Jerusalem. They wanted to leave the scene. Emmaus doesn't exist on most modern maps, but I would imagine that just about everyone in this sanctuary today has been to Emmaus and that you have been there more than once. It is the place you go when you want to get away from what has broken your heart for what has made you doubt yourself, from what has made you decide that the universe no longer is working right. Frederick Buechner says that Emmaus is the place we go to escape, a bar, a movie, wherever it is that we can throw up our hands and say, let everything be hanged. I remember the clerk of session at a church I once served. She's a wonderful person and is beautiful enough to be a model. She is also faithful enough to be a missionary. Not to say that they're not beautiful missionaries, let me be. But the session of the church really got the best of her one Sunday. She decided, with my support, to introduce a new plan for serving communion that would make it take less time. She did a good bit of elder training. The time came for the Lord's Supper to be served. The elders came up, got the elements, walked down out of the chancel, and utter chaos broke loose. Some elders skipped whole sections of the sanctuary and returned to the table with full trays. Others ran out of elements three times before they were done. They wandered up and down and all around the church aisles trying to find out where they were supposed to be. I called the clerk the next day to offer a word of comfort. She thanked me. She told me that all she could think of to do on Sunday afternoon when she got home from church was to go into the kitchen, open a cabinet, grab a jumbo bag of Hershey's Kisses, and go to bed. Anything to escape. According to a poll done by the New York Times and CBS, released just last week, Americans are as unhappy and as dissatisfied as they have been in the past 20 years. Democratic, citizens, Republicans, city, rural, college-educated, high school graduates, 81%. Indicate they believe that things have gotten seriously off track. This is up from 69% just a year ago. There's a lot of frustration in American society, pessimism too, angry and disappointed. Many of us walk down the road to tomorrow with a sense of a darkening cloud over our head. Cleopas and his friend tell the stranger, we had hoped that Jesus was the one to redeem Israel, but it's been 3 days already and there is no sign of him anywhere. We had hoped that the surge in Iraq would do the trick and finally end the war. We had hoped when we signed those mortgage papers that our homes would keep their value. We had hoped that gas prices would not break our pocketbooks. We had hoped that the rivers would be filled with clean water. And we had hoped that traffic would not choke the throat of our city. We had hoped that Ben Bernanke would get the economy going, but none of this has turned out to be true or to come to be. And so it is to Emmaus that three on the road long ago walked, two who were full of despair, and one who knew that all that would separate us from God had been defeated. The stranger, as they approached the village, went on, But the two urged him to stay with them, and so he did. And he came inside to dine with them. And when he took the bread, he blessed it and broke it and gave it to them. And at that moment, their eyes were open, and they recognized him. It was not in the teaching on the road. It was when he broke the bread with them. And then, poof, he was gone, leaving them. But not leaving them alone. Leaving them with one another. Leaving them with their questions that were full of doubt, but even fuller with hope. Were not our hearts burning within us when he was talking to us? He left them with one another. He left them with questions and hope. And he left them with a job to do, to spread the word that he was alive, that he was out there, and that we might not recognize him at first, but that he would come to us and that he would be revealed to us, and often in the most ordinary moments of life. In none of his post-resurrection appearances does Jesus swoop down from above like Superman. And in John's gospel, he slips in so quietly beside Mary, she thinks he's the gardener. In Luke, he shows up in the middle of the disciples' conversation, really in the middle of their doubts and fears, and speaks to them the one word they need to hear, "Peace be with you." He comes to us in the person of the stranger, in the ministries of the church. I could be wrong, but I think Jesus didn't tell those guys out there on the road who he was, because if he had, they would never have looked for him anyplace else. They never would have looked for him in the midst of life. Life at its most real, its most basic. Last Sunday, Al and I went to church with our little family in Richmond, Virginia. It happened to be Baptism Sunday. Our 4-year-old grandson, Charlie, was sitting between his mother and me. He was very interested in what was going on, especially the celebration of the sacrament of baptism. A beautiful little baby, about 7 months old, bald as a billiard ball, but dressed up to a fare thee well in the family christening gown. She was in her daddy's arms as the family stood around the baptismal font. Charlie watched the whole thing in rapt attention. He listened to what the minister was saying, I think, because when the minister paused, Charlie looked up at his mother and asked her just as seriously as he could, "Is that baby Jesus?" And the baptism of the baby, and the breaking of the bread, and the kindness of a stranger, he really does show up. C.S. Lewis once wrote, "When we get to heaven, we will say to God, 'So it was you all along. Everyone I loved, it was you. Everything decent and fine, everything that ever happened to me, everything that made me reach out and try to be better, it was you all along.'" May God give us the eyes to see, and may the peace of Christ abide with you this day and always.